At Parker, our purpose is simple. We want to make the world a better place. By working more efficiently, by using more sustainable practices, by developing better technologies, we keep moving forward. With each new idea, innovation, and partnership, we're one step closer to fulfilling our purpose every single day. To find out more, visit parker.com/purpose. Parker, engineering your success.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. They focus on exceeding your expectations and simplifying your life. Corient has been helping high achievers just like you enjoy their lives more fully, preserve their wealth, and provide for the people, causes, and communities they care about. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has deeply experienced teams in 23 strategic locations. Corient has extensive knowledge spanning the full spectrum of plan investing, lending, and money management disciplines. Leverage Corient's exclusive network of experts to craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex they may be. Real wealth requires real solutions. For more information, connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com. Corient.com.
Hey guys, thanks for joining us for the TFL official podcast. It's been a year now, and over that year, hundreds of thousands of you have tuned in to listen and to find out about your favorite cars and trucks. If you're watching this on YouTube, thank you. If you're one of our Patreons, double thank you. And if you want to listen to it as an audio podcast, feel free to tune in to wherever you get your favorite podcast, including Apple, Spotify, you know the rest. Hey guys, welcome to this electrifying episode of TFL Talk. Do you like that, Tommy?
I did like that. I thought that was very clever, Dan. Very well done.
That wasn't clever. That was pretty cringy. And if you hear any kind of heavy breathing or equipment being broken...
You are getting old. I understand.
No, it's because we've got our wonderful Bernese Mountain Dog sitting next to you, partaking in today's fun conversation about what is the best new electric car out there. And today we're going to be talking about four that we've recently driven. So if you guys are out there in the market for an EV, what four are we talking about, Tommy?
The newest and the greatest. So, Tesla Model Y, you gotta talk about the Model Y, the Ford Mustang Mach-E, the Volkswagen ID.4, and the Polestar 2.
Yep, that's right. And they all sort of kind of compete, but basically I think they're the newest and the hottest and the most interesting, and we've driven all four of them. In fact, as a company, we own the Model Y. Because, well, we wanted to have it as kind of the standard by which to judge the other cars.
Yes? Absolutely, yeah, for sure. And it's kind of the standard, I think, still. It's the most seasoned on the block in terms of the group.
It's been around the longest.
That we are talking about
today. It's been around a year about now.
Yeah, and it's had plenty of miles on it. It's had plenty of tests and reviews. But why don't we start by talking about the Model Y?
Okay, yeah, so let's start about that. You know, Tesla has been in the electric car, there's Blaze about to knock down our lighting. In the electric car world, the longest, right? It's been 11 years now since they first introduced the Roadster, or give or take. And let's face it, they are setting the bar. And I know people who love Teslas, I know people who hate Teslas, but the fact is they are setting the bar and creating the paradigm for the electric car. So the Model Y, basically solved all the problems of the Model 3, which we also owned, right? So the Model 3 had not enough headroom, not enough stuff room. It was a sedan versus a crossover, and the Model Y fixed all those issues.
Well, it's kind of like someone took a Model 3 and then stuck it in an oven, and it just kind of poofed out a little bit. So they are more or less based on the same chassis, or the same architecture, maybe is a better word. They are more or less similar underneath in terms of their battery layout and their motor design. The interiors are very similar, but the Model Y just makes a lot more sense for Americans, especially now since everybody is buying crossover SUVs. And I think it's the right car at the right time at a pretty decent price. And for the most part, they knocked it out of the park.
Yeah, they did. It's also taller than the Model 3, so it's got a little bit higher seating position. So let's talk about the specs, because those are where the bar is set. So we've got the performance. It's give or take, according to the EPA, around 300 miles of range. It has give or take about, what, 450 horsepower. The 0 to 60 performance will do, and these numbers aren't posted, okay? The 0 to 60 number is posted, but the horsepower number, Tesla doesn't post, but people out there know what it is. So 0 to 60, it's very quick. It's about 3.6 seconds. We've tested ours. We haven't been able to get it down to that number. We've gotten it down to about 3.9. It has, what, a 75 kilowatt hour battery, and it has, you know, just lots of cool tech, including, you know, the headline, the marquee, Autopilot. We didn't go for full self-driving because it used to be I think it's $10,000 now. We felt like it was, you know, a lot of expense for a lot of software that you didn't need. It also has a frunk, which we'll get into later, because one of these vehicles does not have a frunk, which is weird. It's all-wheel drive. It's got tons of room in the back for yourself and your stuff. Of course, it's got, you know, the minimalist design interior with just one big iPad-like screen and two little buttons on the steering wheel that operate everything else.
So price-wise, the standard long-range model comes in at $49,990, which is a lot of money, especially for the base model. And then if you want the high-performance model, you go for the performance. That comes in at a starting of $60,990. I'm just reading off the website. There are a choice of five different colors, a couple of different wheel options depending on which one you get. There's a tow hitch, which is an option. I think it tows 2,500 pounds, 3,000.
Yeah, we ordered it, and then we wanted to get it right away, so we never got ours.
The cool thing about the Model Y, too, is it's available in three rows. So if you want a seat seven, the Model Y has an option for that. It's a $3,000 option. Apparently, the rear seats are supposed to be really tiny, but they do work in a pinch.
Kind of like that Mitsubishi Outlander I was trying to get my butt into recently.
And then full self-driving, like you mentioned, is a $10,000 option. That will do like the summon. It will do the automatic lane changes. It'll do the traffic sign kind of recognition thing. Now, exterior-wise, I'm not sure it is all that pretty.
Yeah, you think it looks like a fat catfish.
Just the proportions don't quite work for me. I mean, I just picture the Model 3 that kind of went through a lot of Botox. That's the way I look at the Model Y. But part of that, I imagine, is because it needs to be aerodynamic. Even though it's an SUV, quote unquote, it doesn't have a lot of ground clearance. You know, it's still pretty low to the ground for efficiency. But I do agree with you. I think the interior is really nice. Super minimalist, which people either like or they hate. But it just feels really, really good when you're inside of it.
Now, we have to talk about Tesla as a company because it does offer still advantages that the others don't. And the biggest of those, I think, has to be the Tesla supercharger network. They've got it figured out, right? You pull up the supercharger, you plug it in, it bills your credit card, it tells you where the superchargers are at, how many people are at them, what the charging rate on the superchargers is. It tells you how long it's going to, you know, take to fill up, which some of these cars don't do. And these are things that become critically important once you start living with an electric car. And they're things that, like, other EVs don't do. I think they just did something else, which is cool. So Tesla sometimes builds in features into the car that they don't activate until a little bit later. They do, and they have always done, significant over-the-air updates. The most significant one I can think of is when we had our Model 3 dual motor, it actually went from 0 to 60 from 4.9 to 4.7. So they actually made it quicker. They also extended the range. Recently, the updates to our Model Y have been pretty silly, like just bug fixes, kind of like the stuff you see on an iPhone or a laptop computer, nothing significant. But in the past, those upgrades, over-the-air upgrades and updates have been free, complimentary, and important, and cool, and adding functionality. So you feel like you're getting things you didn't pay for, and that gives you a good sense of like this car is always changing a little bit. And finally, the last thing that it has is it's the only one that is actually sold through its stores, right? There's no dealer network. It's all Tesla corporate.
You can go onto the website, order one right now, and then pick it up in, I don't know, a couple weeks or whenever.
A couple days. You could pick one, probably order one now and pick it up tomorrow if it's one that they have in stock.
Exactly, yeah. Very, very different model than the dealership. And whenever we've bought one, it's great not having to deal with the typical dealer shenanigans of what can I do to get you into this car this week, and then you don't have to go through the insane paperwork. I mean, it seems to be really zippy, really well done. And if you have questions, you can ask some questions, but for the most part, you're in and out.
And you will not pay oversticker.
Yeah, there's no such thing as a markup on a Tesla, as far as we know. I've never seen one.
But there is such a thing as Mr. Musk's whim, and oftentimes he will, at a tweet, drop the price, include free supercharging, not include free supercharging. You know, he tends to move the bar around a lot. What we have found is if you're shopping for Tesla, those kinds of things tend to happen at the end of the quarter when they're trying to hit their numbers.
The other thing he does too is sometimes he just makes a model available or unavailable. So for a while there...
Yes, that's right. The two-wheel drive.
Yeah, he came out and said there will be no two-wheel drive Model Y. And then for like a brief moment in time there was, you could order one. And then it was like zip, gone. Right off the menu once again.
And the other thing they do, which we've taken advantage of, is they will come to your home or office and fix it. And ours has been kind of problematic. The rear door stopped opening up 3 times.
I'm not sure that the quality is there. Yes, they had to fix the rear door a few times. We had an issue with the heat pump, a valve in the heat pump.
Yeah, it stopped. The heat stopped working in the car when you were trying to get across Loveland Pass in the winter.
Yeah, like 4 degrees. It was not a great time for it to fail. Yeah, ice was building up and it was crazy. But, I mean, it does feel like you're driving the future. So the key is interesting. The key is all on your phone. They do give you a backup little like credit card thing.
Yeah, that you can use.
But for the most part, you just pair your Bluetooth and it's super seamless. I've never had it fail. And the app is incredible. You can schedule service. You can unlock, lock. It works immediately every time.
So I would say that out of all those things that we talked about, right, the dealer network, the way that you charge it, the way that you buy it, the way that it updates itself, all of that, I think, is the industry standard going forward, and Tesla has it. The only one that Tesla doesn't have, I think, is the build quality. I think I would say that all three of them, the ID4, the Mach-E, and the Polestar 2, are built better than a Tesla. They just feel better screwed together.
I also think the range is potentially a little bit optimistic.
This is a whole conversation we should have another podcast, but you're exactly right. I mean, I think here's what we figured out. Volvo seems to be overestimating their range. I mean, Volvo, it's Polestar, right? So Polestar is a spinoff of Volvo.
I think underestimating.
No, over. I think that those are over. So the range is actually less than they claim.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Okay.
So I think Volvo is overestimating. I think Mustang and the Mach-E is underestimating or sandbagging it. I think Tesla is overestimating.
Uh-huh.
And I don't know about the ID4.
Yeah, we had it for such a short period.
That might, you know, with the way the Germans are, that might be just right on what they say they are. But in general, Tesla does set the bar, whether you love them or hate them. And speaking of that, Tommy, we've owned ours now for, almost 8-9 months. What do you love and hate about it?
Well, I love the infotainment system. Infotainment system works great. I love the phone app. I think the phone app is great. I love the minimalist interior with the glass roof. Gotta love the performance.
Yeah, that's my favorite part. I mean, you can pull up next to any sports car. I mean, almost any sports car, and you will blow its doors off in a crossover, which is crazy.
The supercharger network is just the best. Yeah. It's better than any other third party. And I think it's got a lot of room in it. So I think the frunk is very big and usable. Fold the seats down, tons of space. Huge cubbies underneath the floor in the rear, which are super usable. My dislikes, the build quality. I don't think the build quality is quite up to par. Although the service experience has been great.
It's been great. They've done a good job in fixing everything. And
yep.
They've done it in a timely manner.
Uh-huh, absolutely. I hate how they're all the same.
Yes.
Every Model Y I see is like 1 of 5 colors and 1 of 2 trims. And I just feel like I see myself driving the other way all the time.
It's very communist.
I mean, it's not a Trabant, Dad.
Should I say very early Ford? You can have your Model T in any color as long as it's black.
Yes, I think that's a fair way of putting it. And I don't like all the piano black kind of plastics.
Yeah, that's kind of passe now. For a while, that was like red hot in the industry, and now it's too much. It leaves fingerprints everywhere.
Yes, I think that's right. And my last complaint is like the range. Whatever it says, I subtract about 50 miles. If it says 200 miles of range remaining,
I disagree with that, but that's certainly your opinion. You know, we do live in a cold and very hilly place, which does affect range.
True that. Yeah, that's a great point. But yeah, I mean, I think they knocked it out of the park with the Model Y.
So here's the thing, Tommy. I think that there is room for the traditional manufacturers, dare I say legacy manufacturers, to compete with Tesla. Because I think there's a lot of people who have now had Teslas and are getting a little bored of them. I think there's a marketplace of relatively wealthy people who would be open to like, you know, a Porsche that wasn't $170,000, right? That's the problem with the Taycan. But if somebody could come along and actually make an affordable Tesla killer, or, you know, take it to the next level, I think that they'd do very well. So the question is, has either Volkswagen, Polestar / Volvo, or Ford done that? So let's start with the Polestar, because we spent the least amount of time in that.
Well, Polestar is also doing something kind of funky with their dealer / store network. Can you explain that?
Yeah, so what we think, and Polestar, I think, will not admit this, but what we think happened, so Polestar started out as kind of, think about the way AMG used to be a performance variant of Mercedes, and the Mercedes bought them, brought them in-house, right? They were like a race team, and they made them in-house. They built performance, and then they became like its own separate kind of sub-brand under Mercedes. And that's the same thing with Polestar. Polestar was like a racing team that Volvo bought, brought them in-house, and then they spun off as its own separate electric brand, which is weird because the Polestar 1 is a hybrid, so maybe it's kind of electric. The other thing I think they did it for is because in America you get those tax credits, significant tax credits, $7,500 federal tax credit.
Which Tesla's lost, more.
After, I think, 200,000 units or something.
Yeah, that goes away.
Right, and if you built it under the Volvo name, you couldn't take advantage of that. But if you created a whole new sub-brand that is a brand, then you could take advantage of that. And they are. So we had the car for a very short amount of time.
I still don't understand, and I've been explained it many times, and my IQ is just too low, but it's very confusing because
they don't have any dealers.
Yes, and it's not a Volvo. Like, it is expressly, it does not say Volvo on it.
The Recharge, the XC40 Recharge.
That is a Volvo.
That's built on the same chassis.
Underneath is the same, right. But the Polestar is like, they're very adamant, this is not a Volvo.
But it feels very Volvo-like.
It does feel very Volvo-like.
And you know, the head designer of Volvo is the CEO of Polestar.
And where do you get it serviced?
At a Volvo dealership.
Yeah, I mean, it's...
So it's crazy. The way you buy it is you actually go online, you set up a test drive, and if you live in, like, big metropolitan cities, you might have a pop-up store.
Okay.
Or if you don't, then they will bring it to you for a half-hour test drive.
Yes, which is what we did.
Which is what we did. And then you get to test drive it, and then you buy it, but it's still being sold through the Volvo dealer franchise network. It's not being sold through the company like the Teslas.
I don't really, okay. Anyways, if you can buy one, let's talk about what they're
like. If you can
like.
Buy one, yeah. So if you can buy one, you know, like they're very Volvo, like, you know, I mean, it's you know, the thing has very environmentally conscious interiors, right?
Vegan.
You can get one
interior,
leather-free.
Yeah.
The colors are it's very minimalist, it's very Swedish. Its operating system is based on Android, which is a good thing, I think.
It's very slick, yeah, the IP is...
The way, the IP in the Tesla is still the best.
Yes, I agree. I think...
That's its own thing, too.
If I could spend a couple days with the Polestar, I might change my mind. But initial impression was that the Tesla was a little better. So the big thing I don't really understand what this Polestar is, because you look at it at first and you're like, well, it's a car, it's a sedan. But I was talking to Alex Dykes from Alex and Autos, and he said, well, the Polestar actually has more ground clearance than my Mustang Mach-E, which is an SUV.
It's got a fastback, right? It's got a
It's like a cam back. Yeah, I mean,
it's a liftback.
It's not a trunk. Like, the whole thing goes whoop.
Yeah, so it's like a liftback.
Yeah, they need to figure out, is it an SUV? Is it a car? Is it a hatchback? Is it a...
It is very comfortable.
Crossover? The seats are very good.
Yeah, so it's very comfortable. You know, it's like if you took Volvo to the next generation, that's what it feels like, right? It feels like if you wanted to kind of go one step beyond what Volvo is, this is what it would look like. The controls are relatively intuitive. It's got some pretty funky stuff in it. The funkiest is it's got a glass roof like the Tesla, but they actually take a little light and they shine the little Polestar, which, by the way, is not a strip club, even though a lot of people think about that. It is the North Star. So they shine a little star onto like the glass roof right in front of the driver there, where kind of above the rearview mirror, which is kind of funky. And then, of course, you know, it does most of the electric car things, which I like. So it does one foot driving. It's really not an accelerator pedal.
One pedal driving.
Right. I guess it's an accelerator, not a gas pedal, right? So you can, you know, drive it that way without ever touching the brakes. It is relatively quick. You know, do you have the 0-60 on it?
I do. I think it's 4.8,
yeah,
4.7. So two electric motors, just like the Teslas, one on the front, one on the rear axle. They're saying the total power output is 408 horsepower. The torque is 408 87 foot-pounds, and the range is 233 miles with a 78 kilowatt-hour battery.
But there are some problems. And these are pretty significant problems. Let's just start with the marquee problem. It's expensive, Tommy.
Yeah, so starting is $59,900.
$60,000.
There's also, confusingly enough, there's a performance model which doesn't give you any additional performance. It gives you like Ohlins shocks,
yeah, it gives you Ohlins
Brembo brakes, but for most people, they're not going to feel that driving around every day. I thought it was decently quick and decently sporty. We didn't have the old ones. It was just a normal one. But it was nothing that you would be like, wow, this is incredible. It was good for a gas car, very good for a gas car. But in terms of coming out of any Tesla, even like a dual motor Model 3 standard deal, it's not going to feel that crazy.
And, you know, we could get into like which of these has the best, most responsive steering, which has the best, most responsive brakes. But, you know, they're all crossovers. And so, you know, we don't judge them as that. The most obvious thing you can judge them on is how quick they are, and the Tesla is by far the quickest. If you're looking for a sporty car with, you know, nimble ride and precision-like steering, none of these are going to do it for you.
Yeah, I mean, they're more like, especially the Polestar and the Tesla. I've been listening to a lot of EV podcasts that say they're not luxury vehicles, especially the Tesla. Tesla's not a luxury. I consider it a luxury vehicle. I think it's got the amenities and the quality. Well, I mean, not the quality. The amenities and the materials.
Maybe the design.
The design of a luxury car, yeah. And I certainly think that the Polestar falls into that same luxurious, like, BMW, Mercedes category.
So I said there were two big problems. The first one, of course, is it's expensive. And the second one is the back seat.
The back seat is pretty useless.
Yeah, it's pretty tiny back there. You know, once again, if you're going to have a crossover and, you know, you're going to have customers who are buying it because they want to put their stuff and their family and their friends in it, make the back seat usable. And in the Polestar, I'm 6'2", and I'm, granted, a little bit taller than most, but I would not be comfortable back there for anything but like a short trip over lunch.
I completely agree. Yeah, it's not really that
acceptable.
No leg room,
no headroom.
No, I was not impressed with it in terms of the back seat room. I think the build quality was very good. It felt very well screwed together. Cabin noise in the quick test drive we had was good. The Google IP system was awesome. I think it's got that Ask Google thing too.
Yep.
The instrument cluster was fully digital. That looked nice. The whole car though felt pretty cramped. I mean, the Tesla feels very airy. The Polestar feels like you're putting on a coat, right? The Tesla's like you're walking into a stadium. The Polestar is like you're putting on a big jacket.
Yeah, and now there's another metric that we're not talking about, and there's a specific reason we're not talking about it, and that is, of course, charge rates. All right? In other words, how big is the hole that you can pour electricity into the car? And each of these vehicles will have a different charge rate, but there are two things when it comes to charge rate, and if you're an electric car guy or gal, you'll understand these, right? First, it's how much power you can shove in the hole and how fast you can do it, and then for how long you can sustain that, right? Because let's say you've got a maximum of 150
kilowatts
that you can put in, which is, you know, a big number. Some of the Teslas go up higher than that now, but 150 kilowatts that you can put in. How long will the vehicle sustain that? And, you know, because, look, you can get most of your charge in the first 80% of the battery, and after that, that chart severely goes downhill. But even with most electric cars, you'll be at 150 at the start of that charge if the car is almost empty, and then quickly that graph goes down. And so you're putting in less electricity or less power the longer you're charging it. Now, that's how it all is supposed to work, but we've owned electric cars now, and we've had a bunch of them, right? We've had the Model 3, the Model X, the Model Y, the i3, the Smart EV. And what we have found is that this is a very complicated process because there's a handshake that has to happen between the car and the charger, and each charger is different. And the state of the battery comes into play. You know, how warm is it? Is it conditioned? And most of the time, these numbers are marquee numbers, once again, that the manufacturer says, but then in the real world are meaningless.
Realistically,
it never happens. And I've never, even in Teslas, I've very rarely seen the max numbers going in.
Realistically, the whole charging not at home thing
is a pain in the ass,
and it's not something that I think most people are ever going to do. I mean, I'm just going to make a bunch of big assumptions, and I think they're fairly educated assumptions. I think most people currently in 2021 buying an electric car have a house and a place to charge it at home,
or an apartment, or, you know,
and if you don't
level 2 charger.
I'm just going to say, if you don't have access to a place to charge it at home, Just, I would skip the electric thing for now. It's just, it's not worth the effort.
If we have a level 2 charger, right, which is like your dryer.
Yeah, it's great. So what we do, we have one at home, we have one at the office, and every EV, we plug it in. When we go to sleep, we wake up with the full quote-unquote tank, and you're ready to go.
Yep.
I mean, and that's just how you live. So the whole, like, oh, the peak charging rate's 250. I don't think many people are currently road tripping these cars. I don't think many people are going to be using the public level 3 chargers on the regular basis. Just plugging in at home. If you can't plug it in at home, if you live in an apartment, which I understand a lot of people do, the EVs, I'm just going to be brutally honest with you, they're not ready for your lifestyle.
Yeah, and let's face it, if you have like 250 miles of range and you can get a full charge overnight, that's plenty. You will not go through 250 miles in a day.
Even 200.
Let alone in a week, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, because, you know, so that's fine. Like Tommy says, if you're relying on, you know, the free charger down the street or the Electrify America station, you're going to spend a lot of time figuring out where to juice up your car. And you're going to have a lot of frustrations because, you know, it's beyond the stuff that happens, like, you know, like trucks parking in EV spaces or EVs being broken or EVs not accepting your credit card, EV chargers not accepting your credit cards, or EVs being blocked by something else is just all too common. And you're right, it's if you can't do it at home safely, if you don't have a place where you can do it, then it becomes like the thing that rules your day.
And I think the EV people, like the hardcore EV people listening to our podcast, are going to call us whiners at this point, saying, oh, it's not that hard. But for the average person who's been filling up their car with fossil fuels for the last 30 years, I just don't think they're going to put up with it, especially not at $59,000.
There's a gas station at every other corner.
Yeah,
currently. And it takes exactly 2.5 minutes to fill up a car.
That's going to change. I think it will change. But even the best system, like if I had a Model Y and I couldn't plug in it at home, I wouldn't want to have to deal with waiting at superchargers, and then the one at Trader Joe's is full because it's always full, and then I have to go to, it's a pickle. So I'm a huge proponent of EV. If you have a place to plug it in while you're sleeping, buy one immediately. They're totally worth it. Otherwise,
and look
elsewhere.
More power to you. If, you know, you want to help save the earth, I am in your ballpark. I'm eternally grateful. And if you've got the energy and the time and the convenience to, you know, to put up with that for the sake of environmental reasons, I applaud you. I'm very grateful.
Yeah, for sure.
But for a lot of people, I think, unfortunately or fortunately, however you look at it, that's not the trade-off they're willing to make. And the other thing that I think is hugely important, and this is a very big difference between the United States and Europe, and maybe even China, is just the way that, you know, our country is structured here in America, right? So in America, especially if you're not in one of the big cities, there are huge distances between cities, and electric cars just don't work very well when there's a whole bunch of nothing in between chargers. Whereas if you go to Europe, where electric car adoption, especially in places like the Swedish countries or the Norway, Sweden, you know, the Nordic countries, it's off the scale, in Germany as well. But that's because you've got, you know, I've spent a lot of time in Europe. I was born there. I lived there for a long time. You've got like a lot of infrastructure everywhere because there's a lot of urban everywhere.
Yeah, that's a good point.
There are no chargers in the middle of Kansas. There are no chargers in the middle of Nebraska. There aren't, except for maybe, you know, a couple superchargers built out by Tesla along the highway. But you get off the beaten path, there's no way you're going to, you know, charge up your car. It just doesn't exist right now.
Hmm. Yeah, it's a very good point you're making. Well, let's get back to talking about cars.
Okay, so let's go to the next one.
Yeah, so the Mustang Mach-E.
I'll save that for the end.
Okay, I gotta pull up a different...
Oh, you want to do it now? Let's do it now. You got it pulled up.
Yeah.
All right, let's talk about... I was going to save it to the end because I think that's the best of the bunch that competes with the Tesla out of the ones. And we had it for a week. I was really impressed, Tommy. It's a, you know, I'll give you the good. I think they're sandbagging the range, so I think it's got more range than they're saying that it has. So,
yeah, I agree.
It's also quick.
It's quick.
We don't have the GT yet. That's coming later.
I think it's pretty good value for the most part. If you get the right one, it starts at $42,895, but Ford still applies for the full tax credit.
Yep.
So and the tax credits, look it up if you want to know, but it's based on, you know, your income and your tax situation. So like me, I wouldn't apply for the $7,500 because my tax liability isn't that high. But if you do apply for it, then yeah, it'd take $43,000 and just snap off $7,500.
Plus 2.5 in Colorado, so $9,000 if you're in Colorado.
Yeah, that's a pretty big deal.
And you get, you know, like in California, you get to drive in the HOV lanes. That's a huge deal for people in California.
Absolutely.
But yeah, I think it's the best of the bunch. I think they, you know, look, here's kind of my take. The Mach-E is Ford's take on a Tesla.
Okay.
You nonsense people are going to hate to hear us, but it's true. The ID.4 is a German take on a Tesla.
Okay.
And the Polestar 2 is a Swedish take on a Tesla. In other words, these are all kind of Tesla copies, right? Mm. None of them have pushed the bar any further than Tesla has done, which means that they're, you know, they some of them do like over-the-air updates. Ford is doing over-the-air updates right now.
I think they all do now. I think Polestar, Ford, and VW are all doing over-the-air updates now.
Right, but not the same to the same significant amount that Tesla does. I don't think that the Ford will actually get quicker.
We'll see. Would be cool if it did.
Anyway,
cool
style-wise, I think the Ford is a little ungainly. You know, I mean, I wish they hadn't called it a Mustang. I think that set the bar in the wrong direction. If they wanted to make an electric Mustang, they should have. I still think they should. But it's kind of too tall and narrow. I'd rather see it, you know, a little bit wider and lower. But it is a true crossover, and so you do have a good seating position. The interior is really nice, actually.
I love
the interior.
I'm going to have a different opinion. I think that of the group we're talking about today, the Mustang is the best looking.
I agree. I think it's the best looking.
I think it's better than the Tesla and the Polestar and the Volkswagen.
It's not great.
No, it's not great. I agree. It still is a little... So there's a thing in the industry called compliance cars, which are like 10 years ago, California, it's a long story, but CARB basically foreseen the creation of these converted gasoline cars.
California.
Yeah, California. And Ford had one called the Focus.
Yep.
And then apparently they were in development of another one after
Focus.
EV, which was, full ground up EV. And then they scrapped it allegedly and they created the Mach-E, which is supposed to have soul and character. And I think it's better than pretty much every other crossover on the market, but the tires are still too thin. It doesn't kind of have that cool command position of like a sports car. And it's just, I agree, it isn't a Mustang. It doesn't make you feel like you're driving a Mustang. It's just, it's a totally different experience. If they had just called it Mach-E, there would have been no issue with any of this. I mean, it's that Mustang that all the enthusiasts are all hung up on, including myself. I have a hard time seeing past that.
And here's the crazy part. This makes no sense, but it is true. Unlike the Volkswagen ID.4, which actually created the Electrify America charging network because of the Volkswagen Dieselgate scandal, you can actually, with the Mach-E, have a pass to use that network without actually having to use a credit card.
So, yeah.
So it's crazy. So Ford is actually accessing Volkswagen's network in a much more efficient and effective way than the Volkswagen itself is, which I don't understand. That's beyond belief for me.
And what we mean by that is it's something called plug and charge.
Yeah.
So like Tesla, you just get out, plug it in, and it builds your account remotely. Ford is doing that in partnership with Electrify America now as well, where it builds your account. Just plug it on in and you're ready to go.
But Volkswagen, who created that network, isn't doing it.
Yes, that's a bizarre thing.
Yeah, don't know why that is. The other great thing about the Ford is it's got the latest version of Sync. I think it's Sync 5, right? We're up to Sync 5 now.
So this is, I think, definitely where the Tesla influence comes in. I mean, it's just like the Model Y. You primarily have one screen in the middle that has every control. There's hardly any hard buttons. There's a volume knob unlike the Model Y, which is a good thing.
Which is cool. It's built into the screen, actually.
But navigation, climate control, radio, it's all in this one central area.
And they did take the iPad and they did turn it the other way from a Tesla. So for the Tesla, it's horizontal with the Mach-E is vertical. There you go.
Great point. Yeah, I think the build quality on the interior is better.
Yeah.
I mean, everything just feels much screwed together, much better assembled is what I mean.
And like the Polestar and like the Tesla, there is a small frunk. I think the Tesla has the biggest frunk, but this one has
it's a pretty good size.
It's a pretty good size.
It's
and
pretty
actually,
good size.
They did some thoughtful things. They put a little plug in it so you can fill it up with ice, you know, and put all your drinks in it. Like, you know, if you're going tailgating, or you put your dirty clothes in it or dirty shoes and then hose it off. So it's pretty cool.
I completely agree. And the other thing I love about it is, unlike the Tesla where everything is on the central screen, there is one additional little baby screen in front of the
screen.
Which
gives you like a speed limit.
Yeah. And that's pretty much all it does. It's like, this is your speed limit. This is how fast you're going. And that's great. It has three different drive modes, which I think are pretty silly. They don't feel all that different.
Yeah. The names are hilarious.
There's, I don't remember. I just remember the one. There's Unbridled,
which is a fast one. Yeah, it's a Mustang. Get it Unbridled. Yeah.
And it turns everything brown for some reason. Maybe it's, they were like, you know how when
color
you,
of your pants?
You know when you put like a GTI in a sport mode, everything goes red.
And it's pretty quick. I want to say it's under five, but it's not tunnel vision quick like the Tesla.
No. And the seats are the best seats I think I've felt in the industry.
Yeah.
But I will say it isn't It does not feel like a Mustang in the twisties. It feels very heavy. Now, the Tesla's
You can feel the weight of the batteries.
Yeah, the Tesla's a really fast steering rack, yeah. So it just like darts right in and out. The Ford is very refined, but you feel the weight. It's a chunker.
It does have a pretty good sized back seat.
Good sized back
seat. Not as comfortable as a Tesla, I think. I think the Tesla's still bigger, but the Ford does have a good sized back seat, so you don't feel like you're in a penalty box. And in the back area behind the seat is actually pretty generous as well.
And while I'm on the Ford website here, let's talk about the different trims and configurations, because I think this is the most kind of customizable of them when it comes to how you want to order it. So at the base entry level, you've got rear wheel drive and a small battery, which is rated at 230 miles of range. And then you can get the small battery and all-wheel drive. Or if you want, you can step up to the big battery. And then there's all-wheel drive on the big battery as well. So tons of different options. The one we had was a small battery with all-wheel drive.
Yeah.
And the EPA rated range was 205 or something.
We got more.
I felt like it was a true 205 even in the wintertime. I mean, it was pretty impressive. I didn't feel range anxiety. I felt it once. And we had a slight kind of a snafu charging it and whatever.
Let's talk about that, actually. So here's the thing, right? We were unable to... So we have a level 2 charger at home that is a juice box.
Yeah.
Which just plugs into an outlet that you can plug your dryer into, basically, right?
And yeah, we use it to charge everything. I mean, i3s, the Teslas, it works across the board.
So the easiest way to charge the Mach-E would be just to plug it into the Mach-E because it's the same...
Yeah, I mean, it's a J7072 plug. It's what you see on every
EV. And the Mach-E would not drink from our juice. It would not.
It was the weirdest thing. It would charge on a 110 outlet, but it wouldn't charge at home on our 240.
And then we're like, well, maybe it's something with the juice box. Let's take that out of the equation. So then we took the charger that came with the car, which is also a 240 volt, right?
They give you both. They give you a 120 and a 240.
And we plugged it into the outlet, which is now just, there's no juice box in between.
Uh-huh.
Plugged it into the Mach-E, no luck,
yeah,
no charge.
It was a crazy
using Ford's charger. And this is not like we don't have like low octane electricity or anything, right?
It was
For some reason,
having it.
It was not accepting it. So, I don't know what the heck was going on there. But if I had bought that car and I had spent the $500 to build out that plug in my garage so I could charge level 2 and I couldn't charge, I'd be pretty pissed off.
Yeah, I honestly...
Nor would I want to think like I need to figure this out. This is a Ford issue.
I think that our car was pretty early production. That could be one of the reasons. And we also had a lot of glitches. So I had a lot of Apple CarPlay issues with that car.
Yeah, the screen did glitch a lot.
It was slow. It was pretty unresponsive. I mean, if that was representative, and I have to assume it is because they sent it to us of a normal car, I'd be a little disappointed in the actual implementation of the Sync. Is it 4 or 5?
5. I think it's Sync 5.
The latest Sync. Yeah. I mean, it's just like it was glitchy. It was unresponsive. It wasn't as bad as the ID4, but it just wasn't quite as snappy as like you'd expect in an F-150.
It was half-baked.
It was...
Not the car, the infotainment.
Underbaked. I don't think it's quite half-baked.
Okay, I'm going to say the ID4 was half-baked. Than the
Yes. ID4 was half-baked. We'll talk about it in a second. Mach-E was a little underbaked. And I had issues with fast charging it, too. I mean, getting it to make the handshake happened to me. That was an issue once. And I couldn't get the thing to charge quickly. It was always charging at like 50 kilowatts. Once again, we were talking about this earlier. Even though it's rated at 125 or something, 115. Like 50 kilowatts at 38%. It was kind of coldish outside, but not that cold. The charging thing is just a real frustration for me at level 3. It needs to be better. And people, especially as more folks end up with these EVs, they're not going to put up with it.
Here's my bottom line on that car, right? So when we first got it, I was super excited. We did the Loveland trials with it against Tesla. We ran it up the mountain. And I was kind of lusting after it. But, by the time it was time for it to go, I was like, I could see it going. I wasn't like that sad about it. And the reason is, it just wasn't quick enough, right? It didn't have the magic that most EVs have, right? What that Model Y gives me is a sense that, when I floor it, it changes my world. And I love that, Tommy. I mean, maybe I'm too much of like an old school sports car guy, but I love the fact that I've got this car that is as quick as anything on the road. Not that I'm racing stuff on the road, just knowing that I have it is cool. And it makes for just, like you feel like you're driving the car of the future with the Mach-E, you felt like you were driving, Ford's version of that. I guess I'm waiting for the GT to come out, right? The one that is going to be as quick as a Tesla. Maybe that one will do it for me.
You just can't compare them.
Right.
Because ours was...
It's a lot more expensive.
5.2 to 60, 266 horsepower tester.
Yeah.
I will say the other issue with the Mach-E is you look at the low price and you're like, you look at the starting price, excuse me, you think, oh, that's pretty reasonable. But once you start adding on options and getting the all-wheel drive, it gets expensive quickly. I think ours was like high 40s, maybe even low 50s. And most of them I've seen online are like mid 50s with the extended range all-wheel drive. And that's, that's an expensive, Mustang is the way I'd put it.
All right. Well, shall we move on to the car that's behind me, the last car that we just had, which is the Volkswagen ID.4. Now, I said something about it that you might find a bit interesting, and I said it was kind of half-baked. And I'll tell you why, Tommy. I'm not the only one out there saying this, right? The car is a very good electric car. It is certainly a very German car, so if you like that sense of German solidity, the way that the German car drives down the road, like you feel like it can go on the Autobahn and easily do 150 miles an hour. Well, this won't 250, but let's say 120 miles an hour. It has all that, but it doesn't have a frunk. And I'm like, I never understood that in like the Leaf. Why does it not have a frunk, right? There should be nothing in the front except more storage. It just feels like the engineers weren't you know, given enough time to completely bake the thing and make it as much of an electric car as possible.
So, okay, I can picture Volkswagen's response in my head right now.
Yeah.
Volkswagen will tell you that they're not targeting the Tesla buyer. They're targeting someone who owns a RAV4 or CR-V, someone who's coming out of a gas car.
I disagree.
Car. And they'll tell you that someone in a CR-V will never pop that hood in their entirety of their ownership. They buy it new, they bring it to the dealer, they never look under there. So why would they do the same with the ID.4?
Yeah, I think that people are going to the reason we're doing this podcast/video is people are going to cross shop all four of these, especially as electric cars become more dominant. And they will think to themselves, you know, I've got all the space in my Tesla or Mach-E or even the Polestar. Why is there no space in here? It feels like, look, it's also a heavy car. Engineers will tell you that the hardest thing to do out of a car is to take weight out of it, right? That's the last... It's the most important thing when it comes to vehicles' driving dynamics, and it's the last like 1% that's the hardest to do. And this is a heavy car, as well as the Mach-E. These are all heavy cars.
Yeah, I agree. I mean,
and you feel the weight.
I do agree. I'm just playing devil's advocate here. Yeah. I think it needs a front trunk because if you look at like the early EVs, like 500e, right?
Yeah.
What were some other ones that were like the compliance cars? All of them, the smart car, right? They didn't have front trunks.
The Soul.
Yes, that's a good one. They didn't have front trunks because they were just gas cars with some electric bobs thrown in, and they were shoving batteries in crevices and places to make them work. This is a ground-up EV, right? It's got the new architecture with the battery in the floor.
Right.
It should have a front trunk. I hopped in this car the first day. We did the review against the Model Y, and I was stoked about it. By day three, I hate to say it, remarkably underwhelmed by the
ID4. There are some things in there that absolutely make no sense. For instance, they got rid of the rear switches for the rear windows, so you have to toggle between the rear and the front. It's like Volkswagen ran out of switches. You know, it's a huge pain in the butt, right? Because you never know which one you're toggled to. The infotainment was glitchy and slow.
I mean, it was.
And we keep talking about infotainment, but electric cars are about that, right?
Well, nowadays you have to use the infotainment for everything. And I thought it was so frustrating. I mean, the amount of time it would take to load between screens, these touch-sensitive, like, haptic buttons that you use as these shortcuts, they didn't work. I mean, Cadillac tried it on the Q system, like, 10 years ago. That was panned as one of the worst systems in history. The ID.4 isn't that bad. Like, I shouldn't say they didn't work. They do work, but you really got to focus on pushing them. And they're unresponsive when they're cold.
So here's the thing about electric cars, right? They're like...
Being attacked by the doggy.
Lazy's attacking you, so let me take over for a second. Here's the thing about electric cars. This is where it's going, right? This is called an iPhone, right?
Yep.
What is the last thing that you use this for?
The phone,
right? It's all about everything else this thing does, right?
Yeah.
Be it, you know, navigation using Google Maps, be it email or texting or, I don't know, TikToking or whatever you use it for, right? Instagram, the phone is the last thing. And that's what's happening with electric cars. Actually driving the thing around is kind of the last thing you're going to end up using it for. It's all the other things that the car does.
Well, that's confusing. I mean, it's still a car.
I know, but that's true because everything feeds into this. So I'll give you an example of that so I don't confuse you, right?
Okay.
Like in a Tesla, once again, I'm going to Tesla. Sorry, it's true. When you plan a road trip, right? It will actually do it in a smart. It will do it in a much smarter way than you can. Like with a traditional car, you would drive as far as you can, run out of gas, fill it up, drive as far as you can. For the most part, run out of gas, fill it up. Right? A Tesla will plan small, quick stops where you basically top off at their supercharger network so that you spend the least amount of time possible charging, and the most amount of time getting to where you're trying to get to. Right?
Yeah.
With the ID4. If you try to plan a trip using their trip planner, it will take you to level one chargers, Tommy. Seriously, level one or maybe level two chargers and completely ignore the Electrify America
and
chargers.
And it'll be like, stay here for nine hours.
Yeah, you know, that's like having an iPhone where, you know, your Instagram app, if you're into that, doesn't allow the camera to work.
I also don't think it's, to be honest with you, I'm not sure it's that good of an electric car. Because when you look at like the efficiency, it's got something like a 78 kilowatt hour battery. Oh, sorry, 82 kilowatt hours gross.
Which is big.
I don't know quite what the usable is. But in rear wheel drive, I think it's rated at 250 miles on a single charge, which isn't very good for that size of the battery and the size of the car. Like, I would expect that to be a higher EPA rating. And the other thing too is in rear wheel drive, which is what they're currently selling, it isn't that fun to drive. I hate to say it, 201 horsepower, it's not that quick. It does kind of has instant electric torque, but it kind of builds into it, and it feels heavy. I was so jazzed about it the first day, because you kind of get...
There you go. Hey.
Yeah, Blaze is now saying hi to my dad.
Hi, Blaze.
You kind of get enthralled by like the play and the pause buttons on the pedals and the cool white interior. Now he's giving him kisses. But in reality, yeah, this ID4, I was pretty underwhelmed. And plus, it has stuff like, why didn't they include a level 2 dongle for the charger, like the Tesla and the Ford? I mean, it's just a level 1 dongle. The good things, I think the interior quality was very good. I like the white steering wheel on the first edition. I like the little screen in front of the steering wheel.
Yeah, it's affordable.
Well, not really.
Well, compared to...
I don't really think it is. The one we had was like...
Well, ours was we had the launch edition, right? Which is the most expensive one with all the bells and whistles.
It was
a white steering wheel, which is going to get really dirty, by the way.
Mid to high 40s.
Yeah.
And even if you do qualify for the credit, I just don't see the value there. I really struggle to see why you'd buy this over a Mach-E.
Hey, he's getting a little too excited, Tommy. I think it's probably time to wrap up this podcast and...
Take him to the park.
Take him to the doggy park. Yeah, go for walkies. That's right, go for walkies. So, you know, I like... Let me give you my 2 cents on it. I like the styling. I actually think it's a good-looking car.
Yeah, I agree.
I like the interior. I think they did a very nice minimalist job.
It's nice.
It's very clean.
Yep.
It's very modern-looking.
Beautiful interior, yeah.
Yeah. But once again, I think... there is some development room there. It's very heavy. Like I said, the use of the battery seems to be not as efficient as some of the other cars. And the infotainment is, yeah, once again, he's eating you now. Here's the thing, right? Car companies are really good at building cars. I'm not sure they're that great at actually writing software. And electric cars really are about software in a lot of ways, more than just writing cars.
I'm gonna give them the benefit of the doubt.
Yeah, let's give them the benefit.
Wait a couple of software updates, maybe it'll get better.
Yeah. And I got a bad feeling, right? Because Tesla has all the buzz right now. I got a bad feeling that all of these cars, except for the Tesla, are going to depreciate very quickly. Teslas don't depreciate.
Yeah.
I think people think to themselves, why should I buy, you know, yesterday's tech when I could buy today's tech, right? Which is really what you're getting when you buy an electric car.
Well, Kim Kardashian has a Tesla, I bet.
Yeah.
That always makes the everyone my age, like the millennials who don't care about driving,
yeah.
Tesla's like the hottest thing.
Yeah.
I think that's part of the reason they hold their value so well.
So, you know, I think you're going to see dual markets happening, differences in China and Europe in here. I think there's going to be a lot more adoption in Europe. I think people are going to jump on that bandwagon much quicker, and that's because I think it's easier there. They also have a lot more choice right now. We're talking about the four major new cars that kind of compete, but there are more coming, right?
Yep.
You know, it would have been nice if GM had invited us to go drive the
Bolt.
The Bolt. I'm talking to you, GM. If you want to be part of this conversation, then you got to let us drive the thing. And there are a lot more coming. It's not just this, right? And of course, there are electric trucks coming, which we've been saying now for 2 years, so I'm starting to doubt myself on that. We'll see how they do in comparison. But yeah, you know, look, my bottom line, Tommy, is right now somebody could do really well if they could build and design an electric car that would truly be the people's car.
Yep.
I'm talking about a car that's maybe 25,000.
Yeah, that goes 200 miles.
That goes at least 200 miles.
That's what the Bolt is trying to be. I mean, that's like,
the Bolt
what,
is like $38,000 at a dealer.
I think the new one starts at 26 or something, doesn't it? I think it's pretty affordable.
The new one, but basically the new one, they didn't update it. They just changed the styling around a little bit. And the other problem with the Bolt, Tommy, is it's too small. The Bolt is like a compact car.
No, it starts at EVs. Looks like 30s.
Yeah, it needs to
32.
Start, it needs to start at 25, and it needs to be a full size. It can't be a compact little car.
All right, I think he's got a poop.
Okay, all right, let's go get him pooping. We'll get you outside.
Yep.
Thank you guys for joining us. We've got dog issues.
we're having a catastrophe here, so we'll see you guys next time.
Take care. Bye. All right, ladies, let's go. We'll go. Come on, let's go outside.
You wanna go poop?
Let's go poop. Come on, let's go.
All right, we'll take it to the park.
All right, bye.
Bye, guys.